Support for KMUW's Into Music podcast comes from McClelland, reminding listeners that Frank Sinatra coined the word skibbity in Strangers in the Night, which you can listen to in their downtown Wichita showroom. More info on McClelland's innovative sound, lighting, and video technology can be found at maxsound.com.
Hi, I'm Jed Bodwin, and you're listening to Into Music from the KMUW Studios, part of the NPR Podcast Network. My guest on this episode is James Petrelli of White Denim. The latest White Denim album, 13, is out April 24th via Bella Union. In this conversation, we discuss how the band's previous album informed the new record's unapologetic approach, whether or not Petrelli's moved beyond his dreams of rock stardom, and his love of baseball. We began by discussing 13's opening track, God Created Lock and Key. That's James Petrelli of White Denim on Into Music, coming up now.
I listened to the album. I started off and I was like, this is like such a Captain Beefheart moment. So it was like, I thought it was like such a great opening to this record. That's like, it's like a little, like, you know, rock and roll, very sort of like unapologetic in what it's doing.
Yeah, it's definitely unapologetic for sure, and rock and roll. I feel like that's a completely fair assessment. Thank you. And Beefheart was definitely top of mind throughout the entire process of recording that piece. Beefheart and Sun Ra. I'm obsessed with that singles collection, the Sun Ra singles collection. Have you listened to that stuff? It's like a bunch of doo-wop and kind of like poetry over abstract, you know, like almost ambient stuff. It's pretty amazing. Old school Sun Ra stuff.
So what kind of led to that, like, sort of approach on some of the material, that it's sort of loud and raw and...
I think that, you know, that's a pretty familiar lane for us. Like, I mean, to take like all the romance out of my answer, I didn't really put anything that was that visceral on the last album. And I could tell in the audience that people were kind of missing it. Like, I mean, I had people say, where's the rock? Like, in between songs, like, we're playing like these, you know, these really honest, like, tender kind of songs. And I've got, like, blokes in the audience, like, heckling me. So I really wanted to you know, give the people what they want, so to speak, but also throw a couple of fingers up in the air while I was doing it. So it's definitely that mood is present in that track in particular.
Now, I promise this is related to the album, but I was outside earlier today, and across the way there's this restaurant, and they're always playing music, and they were playing the Rolling Stones tune Beast of Burden, and I was just like, these guys are like enjoying this. It's like they're savoring what they're playing, you know, like they don't want to let it go. And it struck me that a lot of these songs are like that same kind of thing, where it's like, this is actually enjoyable for us, you know.
It should be, you know. I feel like, and for me at this point in my career, I'm firmly into middle age. I took a fall the other day at my son's baseball practice, and I was convinced for like 4 days that I had broken ribs and that I wasn't breathing fully, like something was wrong. And it's just like falling down on the baseball field, trying to avoid a collision with a 10-year-old kid. So all that to say that I am very aware of the passing of time, and I really want to enjoy the time that I have in this space. Like, my family is, you know, they'll be here in just a couple of hours, and I'll kind of turn everything off and go be with them. And yeah, just every moment that I get to continue making music for as a way of making a living, as a lifestyle, and I want to, you know, recognize that I'm very fortunate to be able to do that. And you know, hopefully that comes through the music.
I'm imagining then that some of those thoughts are kind of finding their way into the lyrics as you're thinking about the process of getting older and time moving. And
of course, yeah, definitely. I mean, there's the most overt example of that is that time track, which when my kids were young, they'd, you know, I'd be like, it's time to go to bed. And they'd be like, is it time? And yes, it is absolutely time. You have to brush your teeth and go to bed, children. So, and there's a little clip of my son at the beginning he's poked his head into the studio. And I was like, I need about an hour. And he's like, I'll give you an hour. That's the clip of him at the top of that song. But yeah, you know, I mean, so much of my adult life I've spent like traveling, and you know, with this like dream of you know, for to sound like a total clown, like rock stardom in the back of my mind, you know, like I'm going to try to approach this as honestly as I possibly can. But I would be lying if I said that I didn't think that there was a possibility that I had a hit in me, you know. So like that little voice definitely led me to accepting a lot of jobs that didn't really make sense, doing a lot of touring that kind of left me alienated from all the people that I love, that kind of thing. So yeah, I definitely take, you know, the spending of my time a lot more seriously than I did early in my career. And I also, I don't believe that I have a hit in me anymore. I will be shocked. You know, I just want to make songs that make me feel good and make me feel better just as a person, like, you know, trying to live well.
So it becomes, I guess, about like, you know, like you said, you know, I don't think I have a hit in me, but it's still about the pursuit of the thing that you started with, which was making music that was meaningful to you, making music that makes you feel good, and then ultimately now connects with an audience. And that's less fleeting than a hit.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe so. Yeah. It does connect with an audience. I think that the audience attention is very fleeting, like just widely in, you know, the past, whatever, 10 years. So I mean, there are certain people in the audience that I recognize, you know, that I feel connected to, and I feel like I'm in communication with them. But you know, a lot has changed for the, you know, like we're not as famous as we were like 20 years ago, maybe even, you know. It's hard for me to, I don't know. It really is I love the process of making these songs and these sounds, and that makes me feel like I'm, you know, for lack of a better way of putting it, like fulfilling like a purpose, you know, like I feel like this is what I'm good at. This is what I'm supposed to do. And I just love like tinkering with all the sounds and the songs and trying to make them better than the last batch that I put out. And I think I'll always do it. I mean, this place is full of like ham radio equipment, basically. You can kind of, I don't know if I gave you the tour last time we were in here, but this is all like, I have stuff that goes back to like the beginning of communication, you know, like, and I feel like, you know, like that grandpa sometimes that's like trying to broadcast from his weird shed, you know, like talk to the ham guys. Yeah. So maybe I'll do that eventually too.
But it is one of those things, right? Like, you know, you mentioned like purpose. I find that there are things in my life where if I've ever tried to like kind of put them aside or something, somehow or other, I get sucked back in. It's like if I were to try to give up broadcasting, I guarantee within 2 weeks there'd be something that would appear and I'd be like, oh, I can't escape this.
Yeah, you have to do it. Yeah. Yeah, totally. I love it. You know, I think that the thing that I was really trying to escape for a while is being an artist, like a public facing, you know, but if I could find people to sing my songs, then I would probably be very comfortable not singing them anymore, you know, but I haven't been able to do that. I love the process of making music and playing in a great band, but I do find it difficult to promote work and to, you know, just kind of be in that like self-aggrandizing space that I don't know. It doesn't feel the most natural to me.
Yeah. Because it certainly feels good when people tell us like, hey, nice job with that. It feels great when 10 people tell us that. But then at a certain point, it just, I don't know. It's like what does it become? It becomes like, it's not like a burden, but it's weird, right? Like, I don't go to the hardware store and tell the guy, like, hey, great job bringing that up.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe we should try, though. You know, like, maybe that would make us feel better about our life choices. My son is playing baseball now. He just started this year. And, he had his first scrimmage game yesterday, and we've been preparing. I come from a baseball family and kind of didn't really push baseball, you know, like we did other sports, and then he started asking me about it. So we've, like, the past 3 months has just been like a crash course. Like, he and I, like, four nights a week really working on baseball, and he did so well. And giving that, like, positive feedback to him, I feel like that's something I'm going to try more, you know, like with everybody at the hardware store, because I could see how he loves it, you know, and I love it too. Like, that's really what it's about. The weird part is if the guy at the hardware store is like, hey, didn't I do a great job with that? And I feel like that's the place I'm in right now with this record. Like, hey, public, look at me. It's time for some attention.
Yeah. Yeah. If the hardware guy is like, I can't hear you.
Right. Yeah. Right. That's the worst. Yeah. I love that.
So do you have, like, when a record's about to come out, do you have those kind of, like, moments of like, man, this could potentially be the worst thing I've ever done. People might just absolutely hate this.
I felt that on the last one. I did feel that way. I did. I loved it. But the first, it was the response really made me feel like, oh, I made a mistake. Like, what have I done? Yeah. The last one I did feel like that. I think that the work is very good. Like I stand by it. I enjoy the work. But my approach going into this one was like, you have to just do it and not read the comments. You have to eliminate all that expectation on other people and just feel good about what you're doing, the thing that you're saying. So yeah, that's how I feel now. I'm not too super worried about it. I think the last two records for me personally, maybe not like the production value or the level of like communication that's happening between the musicians playing the music, but my role in the records, I feel like I did a better job on these last two than I have before. So, you know, I'm sleeping okay.
That's good. I wanted to ask you specifically about one song on the album, which is Quiet Moment, which to me feels like that place that sometimes you can come to in a relationship where it's like, this is the thing that we've always done. What are we going to do different? Because we're just kind of in a rut.
Totally. Yeah. It's not a young sentiment in that song, you know? Yeah. I think Cat Clemens, the guitar player that was with me for a few years, he wrote the music for that. And the lyric is, for me, it was just kind of, I guess, you know, it's just thinking about legacy, you know, how foolish that felt to me when I had the pen in my hand, you know, like I cut my name into the snow, I think is the best lyric that I have in that song. But yeah, I think it's just, you know, kind of thinking about my tendency to try to fill every space I'm in with sound, you know, or like grand gestures, you know, and like examining why I want to do that. And I don't know if that really addresses your song. It's definitely about trying to keep things fresh in relationships and for yourself with your work and all that. I don't know if you got it for sure.
But that does become, I've found myself doing this too, you know, at times where I'm reflecting on something that I did really cool at one point in my life. And I'm like, well, why aren't you thinking about what the next cool thing you're going to be doing is instead? Because that's the only way to get there. Because the other stuff,
For sure.
It's dead, you know?
I saw this band doing a cover of Life's What You Make It by Talk Talk this morning briefly. And the opening lyric, I'd never understood it before. Before I say this, I want to make sure. Oh, I think it's Yesterday's Favorite, Don't You Hate It, you know, is what he said. Like, I had never, that had not registered to me until I heard somebody else sing it, like in a different context. That really struck me this morning. I love that. What a tune.
Are they kind of a touchstone band for you?
I like Talk Talk. I read, I can't remember the name of the book or the producer, the engineer that worked on it. Ian Brown, maybe. He wrote a great book. And I read that a few years ago. I can't, this is a long way of saying not particularly. I've listened to all the music and I love the atmosphere of those records and the attention to detail is so obvious when you listen to the records, like everything is really intentional. So I have a ton of respect for it, but as a group that I'm like, hey, I'm going to put on Spirit of Eden. It's like, I've never said that in my life. I have the record. I love the band. But I'm much more inclined to listen to like free jazz, you know, for that kind of like, you know, if I'm feeling like I need a little edge, like I would go to Ornette Coleman before Talk Talk, but I do really like Talk Talk. And in reading that book, like their process was really impressive. I can't remember what it's called. It's not Sound Man. It's not that, because I think that's Glenn John's book.
Yeah, I mean, I ask because I feel like they're one of those groups that people are either, you know, it's like you're either in or you're out with them. You're either like the totally fanatical.
I'm lukewarm. I'm the rare lukewarm on Talk Talk guy. I like the work is undeniably good. Like I don't think that you could, anybody that knows the first thing about like what it takes to make an album to hear that and think, oh, this stinks, you know, is that you could not do that. Like it's amazing work. But do I love to jam it? No, not always. I will reference it though. I listened to the Mark Hollis solo record recently on the recommendation of a friend, and you know, I listened top to bottom and it was an amazing experience, but I haven't gone back, you know. I think that it's like the rhythm aspect of it isn't thrilling to me. And I really like a lot of rhythm, you know? So when things are really stark and like icy production from the 80s, like I don't go to that very much.
Yeah, it's interesting. If I think
like Pink Floyd, I'm not even really a Pink Floyd guy. How about that? I might be more inclined to listen to Talk Talk than Pink Floyd. Isn't that weird? Well, I don't know if I've told anybody that before.
Depends on which era of Pink Floyd, though.
I like the early stuff, like the Syd Barrett stuff a little bit, you know, and I like his tunes. And I definitely had a phase with Dark Side of the Moon, like, but my favorite cut on that was Any Color You Like, the instrumental cut. And I'll still think about that a lot. Like the texture of that record is amazing. But yeah, I mean, there are tunes that I really like. Fleetwood Mac, that's another one that I'm just kind of like, you know, cool. I like Peter Green stuff, you know, I think that's cool. You know, like there are definitely records and tunes there that are super amazing. But, you know, yeah, I don't go to those classic bands very often.
Do you remember where the impulse to want to capture sound came from? Not just make it, but you know, as you alluded to or pointed out rather, you're all the things that you have in your garage behind you suggest that you're.
Yeah. When did that start for me? I always, you know, like I would mess around making mixtapes from the radio, like with a little boombox cassette deck, and I loved doing that, like waiting for the tune to come on and trying to catch it just right, you know. I really like that. I can remember doing that from probably, you know, age 8, you know, 10 or so. The answering machine I used to play around with a lot. But I always disliked the sound of my actual voice. So I would like kind of throw it. Like I would do like impressions. Like I'm a voice person, you know, like I talk to my dog in a special voice. The kids get a special voice. And it probably has a lot to do with like being the perfect age for Ace Ventura, Pet Detective. Like, or like Saturday Night Live was a huge deal for me. So I used to like to do voices on the answering machine a lot. And like, you know, run takes for the perfect away message. But I didn't get into doing this, like actually capturing myself until like for real at this level, probably, you know, it's like 10 years ago that I probably started. I always had like a 4-track and I would make, you know, voice memos and little demos and collages and things. But I like to keep like some distance there. Like I make little folksy things. And then I hire professionals to help me make proper albums. But 10 years ago, I started to learn a little bit more and kind of take that into my own hands a little bit more.
Your son's playing baseball and your dad was a baseball player. Did you play?
I did. I played until the end of high school. And I guess I gave up like my junior year. So I didn't play my senior year. That's when I really started pursuing guitar. I got my first job. I got a guitar shortly thereafter. But yeah, I played baseball. I think that I've always wished that I played longer, but the circumstance, like I really loved it, but I didn't really have the right mindset about it at that time. Like when I go out and play with my son now, and this is probably true of most middle-aged like baseball dads, they're like, man, I could really do something out here. Like, but I do feel that. I feel like energy around it. My love for the game is definitely, I wake up thinking about it for him, you know? So the trick is like, I just have to be cool, right? Don't turn him into who I was when I was like a head case, you know, 14-year-old baseball player. But yeah, I love the game. I did play, and I was a bat boy like when my dad was playing, and my brother was a professional for a little while. He was drafted, and yeah, he's crazy baseball family. My grandfather too, he was a Washington Senators organization. So yesterday was my son's first game, and they put the catcher's gear on him too. And that's what position we all played. My grandfather was a first baseman, but my brother and dad and I were all catchers. And it's his first game. And they were like, can you catch? And he was like, I don't know. I don't think so. And he played. He played an inning at catcher. I was like, this is crazy. Crazy that they would. Yeah. I'm looking forward to a fun season with him. It's been a great way for us to connect, you know.
Well, it's great that you can be there for him, and it's got to be rewarding for you, just even on the level of like, I can let go of all the other things for a while and just enjoy this.
Yeah, and you know, for me with the game, I think that I chose, to be completely honest, I had an example in my dad of someone pursuing an absurd like childhood dream, and I think that I chose music because it was like, well, what else do I have to? It made sense to me. It seemed possible. And I feel like if it wasn't for baseball, I wouldn't be the musician that I am. And with my son playing, it's an opportunity to kind of like reconcile that energy that I had at the time that I quit playing baseball and put everything into music, you know? I can kind of see how it's a healing thing, basically, you know, which I'm super thankful for. Really excited about.
Well, come on, there's got to be a league like in your neighborhood for.
There is. There's a team called the LA Traffic, and I just might join. I did play for a while. I played like adult sandlot games early in the pandemic because it was outside social distance activity, and I loved it. I still have my cleats. I got I loved it. And I felt like I was the best player too. The competitive bit came out, and And I really, yeah, I loved going out there. I was like trying to get extra practices with people. So I just have to be careful. I can be a little obsessive. I have like since Sam started playing again, I'm like habitually eating sunflower seeds, and I can tell that my gums are suffering as a result of it. I'm like a bag in 2 days. So yeah, I got to be careful.
You've been listening to a conversation with James Petrolli of White Denim. The latest White Denim LP, 13, is out April 24th. You can learn more about the band, including tour dates, at whitedenimmusic.com. You can learn more about this podcast and all programming on our station by visiting our website, kmuw.org. Send us your questions and comments at info@kmuw.org and find all the latest programming notes on that website as well. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you next time. And as always, we'd like to remind you that our theme music is composed and performed by Torrin Anderson.